Boom, there it is. All right, we are live. See ball, get ball, post-draft edition, Brent. I'm your host, David Pollack. Brent Rollins joins me, as always. I think the draft is always so fun, Brent, because all the celebration, all the moments, but we always get something funny. That's what I love about the draft, and I love the reactions. Even as petty as this, Brent, I love the commissioner getting booed every year. And I know that's so stupid, but like, because he's kind of embraced it and he's kind of got like this WWE thing to it. And like, he doesn't really get his feelings hurt. So like
his bank account, he's like, yeah. My bank account's okay.
His bank account's more than okay. But I think those moments are fun. And we've seen the CeeDee Lamb moment that everybody remembers. Like CeeDee's girlfriend grabbed the phone. He's like, bruh, nah, we ain't doing that. Like, you're not touching my phone. And then had
not that one.
Isaiah Wilson's celebration when he got drafted.
Remember the mom got in front of the girlfriend.
Oh, girlfriend jumps on like, let's go, we did this. And mom was like, hey, know your role. Get off my son. I started this. You joined in. That was Russell Wilson's girlfriend going bananas. You remember she was like crazy faced, yes. Going nuts.
Well, this year we had, was it Shuck that had the dog that was jumping up? And I think it was him, right?
I think it
was one of the QBs, but the dog was jumping up and down like crazy. And it, like, I know exactly what that's like. Anytime things like that happen at our house, the dog jumps up and gets going crazy. So,
Gracie gets all over the place. But yeah, I mean, those moments are never forgotten. And then Kelvin Banks Jr. Decided to add his own moment to it, which was he got drafted and apparently his son did not like the Saints because his son's sitting in the lap of mom. He got picked with the 9th pick and he just literally turns over and just throws up right on camera, just like nonchalant side, just lets it rip. Apparently, I mean, the Hoodats, he was not excited about being a Hoodat, being a Saint.
No. So how much did you watch? Because I know we talked about that beforehand. How much did you actually like sit there watch?
I didn't watch a ton as much as I followed it on social media. You know, I was at a basketball tournament. And at the basketball tournament, I was watching it. And I think the Shador thing became a thing. So I kept paying attention to that because it was kind of like Rory McIlroy. It got to a point where I was like, man, please draft the kid. Like, I want to see him. You know, I felt bad. I wanted to see him find a home. But I watched the first round a good bit. And that's where I saw my favorite quotes of the draft, by the way. That's where we go right into the next thing. Because every year – I love listening to them, like, because there's so much emotion, Brent. Like, it's kind of overwhelming when it hits you because you don't expect it. Like, I'm big, I'm macho, like, I'm used to being interviewed. But then all of a sudden, you just made your dream come true. And mine was since I was like 4 years old, I remember telling everybody. And then all of a sudden, it's like, holy cow, like, I just got drafted. And Will Campbell stuck out to me. I mean, his right away when his emotion was awesome. That was cool to see from him, from a player, just that it means that much and it matters that much. But then he says, they're like, how much are you going to fight for Drake May? And he was like, I'm going to fight and die to protect him. And I was like, and then Drake May tweeted it and was like, that's my guy.
Sold.
I mean, are you kidding me? Like, in every Patriot fan, he talked about the logo and how much it meant. And that was a quote that I was like, that's a good way to start it off on the footing, but nobody beats my man, Gray Zabel. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Brent, tell me if it gets better than this. So, Gray, you just got drafted in the first round. What's next for you? And I quote, probably going to start diving into these Bush Lights.
I am going to celebrate.
I mean, that's an offensive lineman with a big old belly from, you know, obviously – FCS, South Dakota. Everybody recruited him, by the way, to go to the higher levels, and he said no. He's the guy who went to the Senior Bowl and kicked the crap out of everybody, played all positions, and he's a first-round draft pick, makes his dreams come true. And apparently, Busch Light is a good beer. I do not drink beer. I would not know. Yeah,
me either. So in terms of if you're looking as a way to get a sponsorship really early, or, you know,
great way to start.
That's a great way to start. But also, you mentioned the emotion of the draft. It's a lot different now because they're in the cities. you think back to it was in New York all those years, and you got some, you know, Jets and Giants fans and random fans that are up in the up high. But now you walk out and it's 100,000 people in front of you, if not more. Like, that makes it even more of an overwhelming thing, which it still amazes me how much more of the draft each and every year it gets watched when it's literally not a game. Guys' names are just being read at a podium, and we love it. It's more football.
Well, we love the parts we just talked about. We like watching their suits and their reactions. And I think you're, as a fan, you're also like, this is my guy. Like, you know, obviously we're from Georgia. We're watching the Falcons every year, and you've been watching the Falcons. And unfortunately, not a lot to cheer about if you've been a Falcons fans over the year, because you're like, what? Like, we haven't had a pass rush. We haven't had X. We haven't had Y. We haven't had a quarterback. We signed one in the offseason for $100 million, and then we just drafted one. Like, it's been frustrating, but, you know, hey.
Well, that actually, that's a great segue, by the way, though, because we made some sort of predictions and picks going into this. So let's kind of rehash some of those just to see how right, for the most part, by the way, you were. So Jalen Walker going in the top five, you said no, that is correct. He went 15th to the Falcons. Shador in the top 15, that was a – that definitely did not happen. You said no, so you were correct in that. First QB not named Cam Ward. That was, you know, you said Shador, and then we talked about Dart a little bit, but Shador was not that one. First running back not named Ashton Jeanty, Amarion Hampton. You got that right. Round one QBs, over, under 2.5. Do you remember what you said?
Under.
You said under. You were correct. I said over just to be contrarian, but – it's also,
so you don't throw those, you can't throw those caveats on there. I just said it to be contrarian. You just wear it and say
no,
you're wrong.
I will say I did think somebody would take the third guy in the latter part of the late in the first round, but it didn't happen. And then round one running backs under 2.5. You were correct on that. There was just two. So, and then looking at some of the sort of my guys and how the where those guys ended up, you had Derek Harmon who ended up in the Steelers.
By the way,
beautiful. I know what you're going to say.
I said he's a Steeler guy. Like I said, Malachi Starks like
is a Raven.
A Raven.
Feels like a Raven.
Well, those people are just, it's always interesting. Like the it's amazing to watch the draft, and you watch the fits, and you watch the personalities of people drafting. And a lot of times it doesn't change, man. Like it sticks pretty consistent, and the characteristics are pretty consistent. Listen, it's also why there's not a big splash sometimes, and there's not a lot of fanfare, but certain teams, man, they have their certain guys that they're looking for. And Harmon's a great example for Pittsburgh, for that kind of guy, like lunch pail, plays hard, versatile, yep. Big, strong. He's a good fit for the Steelers.
Tyler Booker went 12th to the Cowboys. Walter Nolan, another one of your guys, was 16th, which by the way is interesting because you got Jalen Walker, 15, Walter Nolan, 16, and then Shamar Stewart went 17. Three defenders, kind of similar, but no. And then the biggest one, though, Noel Williams, the corner out of Cal that you highlighted, went 85th to the Chiefs. So
I texted you when I said my guy got drafted to the Chiefs. I mean, what a perfect system for the Chiefs. Having a corner that's long, that's tall, that can play the ball and make plays. And, you know, you got the front that typically gets pressure on the quarterback pretty quickly. So that's a great piece for the Chiefs, and not surprising. The Chiefs do a great job every year with the draft, it seems like.
All the ones that I listed, much later picked, but at least everybody did get drafted, ending with Breshard Smith going to the Chiefs as well at pick 228. I think like Dylan Sampson going to the Browns at 126, where the Browns took two running backs and two quarterbacks. I think that's going to be fascinating. Jared Wilson to the Patriots at 95. Like
Were you surprised how long he lasted?
I was actually a little bit. It's just sort of other positions. But so speaking of fits and where they guys go, what were your ones where you're just like, outside of Malachi Starks being a Raven, seeing as how you predicted that one, what were your best fits of the draft for you?
Right away I texted you Mykael Williams. I mean, it doesn't get any better. Mykael's not an elite pass rusher. That's what he needs to work on. But like, you do not question his physicality and his love for the game. And you think about like the 49ers, big, strong guys up front that dominate the line of scrimmage, like that immediately screamed the 49ers. It made sense right away. And he'll fit in great with that system.
The way they play defense, typically four down defense, edge guys are you know, outside the tackle for the most part, and he didn't get to do a ton of that at Georgia. You get to learn from Nick Bosa. That's a great, I agree, great fit for him. I'm going to go local just in terms of, just because it's not something that, and you've already mentioned it, the Falcons have never had the pass rush. It's just outside of John Abraham and then one random Vic Beasley year, it's something that has never existed in Atlanta.
Chuck Smith. Don't forget about Chuck Smith, bro.
Come okay. On. Chuck Smith. My bad. But I'll crap on the process like crazy and how they get to this. But to end, you know, independent of that, leaving with Jalen Walker and then James Pierce. Okay. Awesome. Which, and the even more interesting part of it is the Panthers also going with two edge guys, but much later when they took Nick Scorton at 51 and then Princely Umamielen at 77. Like, ballers. In your division, you took two, they took two, and you're going to be able to direct compare who got the better sort of value in that. But I think that was just best fits because of the need. And there, and by the way, they talked about they're going to start Jalen Walker on the edge, as you should.
They absolutely should. And James Pierce, like, for people that don't realize, like, he played at Tennessee, long, explosive, tall, like, all the traits to be a top 10 pick. Like, in most, let's put it this way, if he didn't have the baggage off the field, he's a top 10 pick. Like, he's that kind of good. Now, listen, they gave up a lot. They traded and gave up a first
round first.
Yeah, I mean, to get him, and that's who they targeted. But I'm just saying, like, that guy, you know, he is top 10 worthy. And Jalen Walker, top 10 worthy. So you got two guys that you can scream off the edge that immediately can make your defense much better. You know, you've been taking first round tight ends and wide receivers for 65 years and a quarterback. So it was good to see them make an investment on defense.
Is there any others that you had? Because I know one that I would think that you would highlight based upon just comments you've had all year. Let me see if I can guess.
I have my guy written down, so I'll tell you if you're right.
I think you're going to love. I thought you would love the Giants draft.
Giants draft is fantastic. I definitely like the Giants draft. My next guy I had, though, was Caleb Johnson. Like, I bragged about him, Brent, all year about Iowa. And I always got frustrated because he never got enough attention. And we talked about it all the time, like all the time on See Ball Get Ball, and had a different name then, but now we're See Ball Get Ball. And I just, man, I thought he was one of the best. I think people looked at an Iowa running back and thought he was probably just a big bruiser. He is. But he's nimble. He has that great one cut. He can make you miss, forced a ton of missed tackles. And you talk about like a fit for the Steelers, like perfect. Najee Harris is gone. He goes to California. Warren, you've seen for years, is really, really good. But is he a lead guy? Caleb Johnson is perfect fit for the Steelers. I love who he is as a player. And I think he'll be absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, the Giants one I mentioned. And I do agree that that's a great pick for them, and especially when they got him an 83rd pick. But the Giants, you get Abdul Carter, Jackson Dart, and Cam Scataboo, three guys that I know you love, just the individuals and how they play as much as anything.
Dude, they're all my spirit animals. Like, I mean, they all play the game with exceptional passion. They play the game with ferocity. They play the game fast. They play the game physical. Like, Jackson Dart plays physical. I know he's a quarterback, but he plays the game physical. You've seen his helmet knocked off many a times. Like, he is not afraid to stick his face in the fan. Abdul Carter falling to three. Like, yes, please, every single time. Like, that's the guy that you will build around. Kayvon Thibodeau is a good player. He ain't that. Thibodeau was never that. He was never Abdul Carter. And by the way, speaking of quotes, backtracking, I love Carter embracing the number, right? Like, he was like, I embraced 11, and he wants 56 with the Giants, right? Why does he want 56, Brent?
LT.
Lawrence Taylor. Like, Lawrence Taylor. One of the greatest to ever do it. Like, and people say, you know, okay, that's adding pressure. Why would you do that? Yeah. Like, I don't think he worries about that, which is cool. But you're right. I mean, those are guys that are – they're ball players, man. Like, they are absolute ballers.
Some other interesting ones I like the Texans, by the way, taking both Iowa State wide receivers, not just one. They took both Higgins and Newell. The Ravens getting Mike Green at 49. I thought that was, who was, you know, we did the pass rush rankings, edge rankings.
The only reason Mike Green fell, Brent, was because he didn't play for a big school. I mean, he didn't play. But you talk about a guy that's going to go be successful in that system. It's going to be he's a character fit because he loves ball. He plays his ace off, and he's going to go get sacks in a great system. Like, very good fit.
The other one for me, though, is Tyler Warren going to the Colts, because when you think about their offense with Anthony Richardson, Daniel Jones, and by the way, also Riley Leonard now as in their QB room, Jonathan Taylor, and then Warren, like single wing to death, QB run game, be the most interesting offense in the NFL, go old school, like two QB systems, whatever you want to do, they can do it and have fun with it because of Warren being there in Indianapolis.
Got drafted before him?
No, because of where. Like, to me, I bet Ben Johnson saw Colson Loveland as his Sam Laporta versus Warren being a different sort of version of that. I bet he looked at it and said, okay, this guy fits what I want to do more so than what Warren wants to do. But also, like, you think about the Bears, they took Luther Burden early in the second. Like, they've loaded up on weapons for Caleb Williams. They have a new head coach. It's time to sort of put up or shut up with him.
Well, it's the cool thing about him too. He's been very outgoing and outspoken about like wanting to go in and take care of the division and win. And I kind of like his rashness. He waited for a long time to get a coaching gig, you know. Yeah. And I think he took the Bears, which was kind of surprising because the Bears have been bad. I mean, talk about fan bases you felt bad for. But the Loveland thing, when you watch him run routes versus Warren, he's more of a longer strider. He's got more speed. And you think about Johnson's offense, it's like those over routes where he can run away from people. I see Loveland's size and speed and ability to separate a little bit. I see it a little better than Warren's. Listen, Warren is a baller though. Like after the catch, Warren all day, breaking tackles and vision and turning into a running back. So it'll be interesting to watch, you know, Warren and Loveland's career and compare those two together. And I mean, Warren, I will admit, like the quarterback play for him, the Colts have been pretty disastrous for a while now. Actually, Gardner Minshew wasn't bad. I apologize. Gardner Minshew was pretty good. But what we've seen so far to start his career with the Colts.
I bet you're also thinking about that from a fantasy football perspective, because I know you're like, I'm probably not taking him in the fantasy.
Well, and Anthony
Richardson. Who am I taking in fantasy?
Anthony Richardson is a guy, like, because of his rushing, you're like, okay, I want him, and I want to take him, but the passing has been so bad. And then last year when he checked himself out of the game, I think that definitely lost some people's respect. I've never seen it, Brent. I've never seen a QB tap out. Like he didn't tap out and quit. I'm just saying I've never seen a QB sub himself out. Like that was an interesting thing. And it actually led to him getting benched too. So,
but obviously the story of the draft, and well, I mean, I guess it's the story of the draft because it's the media's story of the draft, is QB 6, not QB 2 or 3, QB 6. Shedeur Sanders falling to the 5th round, and the Browns, by the way, who also had already taken a quarterback.
Dylan Gabriel,
Dylan Gabriel in the 3rd round. I think this is actually pretty simple. I will get your take before I give mine. Why do you think he fell? Was it justified? All the issues.
You're saying it's simple because it's a value pick at that point for the Browns. That's what I say.
No, simple is in terms of why he's there, why he's picked there versus 33rd.
Well,
or 24th.
We broke this down. I made it very clear where I stood on Shedeur. I did not think he was elite by any stretch, but quarterbacks get overdrafted all the time. That's what happens every year. So I did think he would get overdrafted. I did not think he would slide that far. I would have taken defensive linemen and a bunch of guys positionally that are way better at their position than him. And the reason why to me was the same thing, though. I don't see an elite arm. It's not a bad arm. I'm not saying he's a bum and he can't play. It's not what I'm saying. I don't see an elite arm. The pocket presence I've talked about, Brent, since we started breaking him down, like the evading the pocket and, you know, seeing him do a bunch of the things that you want to see for the next level that you say, oh, that translates and that goes to being a star or to carrying a team. Those traits I haven't seen. And I do think you started to see some chatter as we got closer to the draft, too, about his interviews and coaches leaking stuff. And listen, here's the hard part. you never know what's misinformation, because there's always ulterior motives for all these people. And so I think the interview process of hearing him, and they've said hearing him talk, and you know, the confidence, he ain't lacking confidence. He's not. And that's a good thing, by the way. That's a thing that really helps you out a lot of times. But confidence based on fact is not arrogance. But when it's not based on fact, and when you struggle a little bit, is when you get into a problem and you become harder to deal with, for sure.
Couple of things. One, watching the, did you see the reaction of the war room when his pick was announced? And it was kind of a,
it was like this, like a golf clap, like a, yay, we got him.
Did that feel like it was a owner pick more so than a GM running the show pick?
I think that's that way. That's what's been intimated, for sure. You know, like it's, and it's,
you never know. You never know the timing too when they're showing those screens and all that sort of stuff. So, but still,
but Shador and the whole saga that comes with it is there's going to be, you know, listen, he's filming everything, right? Like, and there's, you know, there's social media that's going to come with it and attention. I think that absolutely will turn some people off, and that's okay. Like that's all right. That if you don't want to deal with certain things, that's why you run your franchise, and it's your prerogative of how you want to run it. And I do think that affects you. Everything about your personality is taken into account. Everything. You are overanalyzed and scrutinized about the dumbest things in the world. Like I told you some of the questions I got asked, Brent. Like we took your teammate with a top 10 pick 2 years ago in the draft. He was one of the laziest players I've ever seen. One group asked me that. I'm like, well, did you watch him practice? Did you watch him play? He was lazy in college. Like, what you want me to say, dude? How do I know you love football? Well, watch my tape. And so they'll kind of push the buttons and try to see what you're about. And here's another thing. These QBs, man, when you go into these rooms with these GMs and these coaches, the QB position is unlike any position. Your ace is going on the board, and you are going to draw stuff up, and I want to know what you know. Like, and I'll tell you this, from watching, you know, Deion and them before they got to Colorado, I was asked to do a tape on College Game Day of their offense, like break down their offense and give me the highlights and why it's so great. This is not a lie, Brent. I went to our producer. I'm like, I can't do a tape and tell you why this is great. It's not great. Like, it's bubbles and goes, and it's just, it's not good. Like, it's not, I can't show you a bunch of clips to show greatness of how it's designed. And like, I didn't think it was, you know, I didn't think it was ultra great by any stretch of the imagination. And I think when you watch Shador's tape, you still see the same thing. There's a lot of good, and there's a lot of good accuracy, but I don't know how much great there is that you say, okay, that's the guy for the next level that's going to carry me to a Super Bowl.
And that's why I think this is actually really simple. Did the league view him as a starting caliber quarterback based upon the tape? I think the answer is no. They did not, because the teams that needed starters didn't take him early. And if you're going to be a starter, they're going to take you early at some point. And we're going to look at kind of QBs and based upon the college.
I got to get this first too, though. I got to get your Mel Kiper take.
So I avoided all of that. One, I didn't turn that channel on specifically the entirety of the time.
Okay.
I'd rather watch Daniel Jeremiah because he's a, you know, podcast alum. So I watched
him. Unbelievable. He's unbelievable. Right. I mean, he's just so good at what he does.
So, and then I avoided all the Mel clips on social media just because I could see that it was overflowing and almost the vitriol there. It was almost just anger in a way, it seemed like.
It was strange.
So I avoided it.
It was strange. I've known Mel for years. I respect Mel. He does a great job. He knows his stuff, but it was very strange. And Reese Davis is the absolute best, because that's exactly what he does. He's a professional. And I think Reese does an unbelievable job of being able to take the emotion out, but Reese also is not going to be, that dude lives by the spirit, and he is a man of the cloth, and he's going to treat people with respect no matter what. And I love that about him. But here's the part that I didn't like about the reaction is, the problem is with that, Brent, is you're taking away from everybody else's moment. That's the only thing I don't like, is there's so many people getting drafted over and over and over again, and you kind of miss their moment because you're having a 5, 6, 7 minute debate while people are getting picked about other things that aren't pertaining to that. And, you know, obviously the shows are the shows, and they're going to do what they do. But you know, you miss moments like that, that I feel like you want to give everybody kind of as much shine as they deserve for their big moment.
So he didn't view him as a starter. And also, so if you're not a starter, what are you? You're a backup. And with being a backup quarterback, it's better that you're seen and not heard. And quite frankly, there's a lot of stuff that comes with having him. And I mean, the draft in and of itself showed that there's a lot of media extra stuff that comes with him and his dad and everything. And that's, dude, there's nothing, and that's, it's not as bad, but as a franchise, I could see all these franchises being like, yeah, I'd rather not deal with it.
That's the best thing I've heard saying it, because it is like, if you're not a starter, which is apparent the way the NFL viewed him, like we said, like that's apparent. Yeah. And I'd agree. I don't think he's a superstar. He's a starter that you're going to build your franchise around, say, I'm going to go win a Super Bowl. That becomes your backup, and that becomes a big distraction, right? Wrong, indifferent. The name Sanders as a backup QB is going to carry weight. It's going to matter. And then, so who has the capacity and want to deal with that as you continue to develop and grow? That's probably why, more than anything, he's sitting there and it's continuing to go, because I think most people would be like, okay, I see the accuracy. I can build with that. Maybe I can get it better. I can get the pocket presence better, but the other stuff is a part of it. And right, wrong, indifferent, him as a backup would be something that everybody that drafted him definitely had to consider.
Two last things on that, and then we'll move on to the next thing. One is the consistency of the message with the interview and how he handled anything and everything at the combine and the workouts. The consistency of him sort of avoiding that versus just being a, like, if he would have been the entirety of the time, I'll do whatever, I'll go throw whatever, I'll answer whatever questions you have, ask me to, I'm here, I want this. If that would have been how he handled it, you wouldn't have heard that. All the consistency, you've heard that.
Yeah.
And two, in the end, the kid went to the best possible place he could have went. The Browns have had 23 quarterbacks in the last 10 years. Baker Mayfield's four-year run is the longest.
So why is Browns. That good?
Because if he's a prove-it shot, that's the place. Deshaun's not going to play.
Or it's a place that you're not going to ever win because you never had developed that position. And so how is that a good thing?
Well, your coach has getting you the playoffs with four QBs. But it's just, to me, if there's an opportunity to play, like, that's a place where he could go and play and win the job and go compete and be like, hey, look, I'm going to do everything I'm supposed to, keep my mouth shut, grind, work. And when I get my time, I'm going to earn it and keep it.
So, well, and think about
up to him now.
Think about him. He trained with Cam Ward, you know, coming out of college. And there's a bunch of stuff that people have continued to put online. And it showed the difference between Cam and Shador. And again, you're free to have whatever personality you want. And personalities, by the way, that's not something that always translates. Some people have great personalities that are loud. Dion was loud and vivacious and like had a over the top. And he was freaking awesome. Like Hall of Famer, one of the best to ever do it. But your quarterback spot can be a little bit different. And just the difference between him and Cam Ward was like, I'm a football player. He's like, let's do it. And Shador was asking him on social, hey, let's do a song. He's like, I don't do songs. I do football.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Like, I want to be a football player. And so different approaches, and Cam Ward went as the number one pick, and his reaction was cool too. Another guy, man, like just the visceral emotion. And like, you could tell how much it meant to him, and his parents, like, mentioned his parents several times in that moment and things that they gave up. And that's a big thing that you're very cognizant of. So that was a cool moment for Cam as well.
Very much so. He's an outlier in this realm. And we'll get to that in a little bit later too. Moving on. One of the things I had actually been looking at this, cause I knew it was happening, but with Dan Jackson, by the way, Dirty Dan Jackson, who wasn't even a walk-on, wasn't even asked to walk on at Georgia. Literally showed up, and Kirby's like, hey, this guy wants to play football. Okay, sure. Earns his spot and earns playing time. And he got snaps on defense in the 2021 National Championship. And he was the last player that got snaps in that game that was able to, you know, be drafted. And that now closes the book on that team. 31 of the 37 players who played on either offense or defense for Georgia in that game were drafted. 84% of the people who got snaps in the that's game. Crazy. So that's what I mean by it says regular snaps, offense or defense. By the way, there was another like five, I think, that got snaps that played on special teams, younger guys and Camarda. But offense or defense, 31 out of 37. I tried to go. I didn't have enough time. I was looking back. I know Alabama's was like 75%, the 2017 Bama team of guys that got snaps in that national championship. LSU's was up there too. Clemson's wasn't as much. I looked at some of theirs real quick. That's well, just
– And how about Sam Jackson going to the Lions too? You talk about a great fit. Like a Will
– That's awesome.
I mean, a Coach Campbell fit to a T, right? Like, we'll bite your kneecaps off. Like, we're gonna hit you in the mouth. He's physical. Like, when you watch them last year in the secondary, they got hurt. Dan Jackson's a guy that's going to play for 10 years. He's probably going to be a special teams guy. But he's also going to be a guy that you can put in the lineup, and he's going to give you everything you have. He's going to be where he's supposed to be. He's going to be physical. He's going to make plays. He's not going to be an all pro. But it's just such a great fit, a great system, and it's a great story. And by the way, with the rule changes possibly coming, these are the guys that we miss. I mean, it's a guy that doesn't get to walk on at places and go have these storied careers because we're trying to get rid of walk-ons in college football, which is another thing I hate, but that's okay.
And I know we've seen this in practice, both practice meetings, all that stuff. Kirby reminds those guys all the time, hey, what's the minimum salary if you play special teams? Just those special teams guys, all those kids know exactly how much that salary is and how much they can, you know, get and be paid in the league, hang around.
Future, bro.
Yes. Next up, we had a tweet that we wanted to, that you'd sent out earlier in the day. This player went too late in the NFL draft and got quite a bit of response. And so we're going to highlight some of those responses. And
here's the thing. This had nothing to do with past. Like, we just had the draft, so you're thinking, you know, you're
this
thinking
weekend.
Present. Like, I'm not smart enough to live like in the past, but like, you think present, and you immediately go look on there, and Daniel Patterson goes Tom Brady. I'm like, of course, and he's not wrong. Like,
he's not wrong.
He is absolutely not wrong. It's Tom Brady was in the sixth round, one of the greatest, the greatest pick of all time. You know, one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever do it. So. That definitely obviously makes sense, but we were thinking probably more along the lines of this
current
year's draft.
This year's draft. So Mr. Pate, Josh Pate.
Commonality between a lot of guys. Like Quinn Ewers was a big one. He was one that I saw ad nauseum, and I was going to give credit to the people, but there were so many of them, it was hard to give credit to them. And then our boy Josh Pate.
Yep. Restrepo.
Xavier Restrepo, who is the Miami – think about all the Miami wide receivers that have come through the draft. Like, you could go down the list for the Mosses and the Michael Irvins. You could go down the list of the speed, Hester, you know, playmaking with that. Xavier Restrepo leads him in total yards, receptions, and touchdowns in the history of Miami football. Like, that dude was a route-running machine and a playmaking machine. He was focused. His hands, he catches just about everything you throw his way. So, he's a guy that you're kind of like, why does he slip? Maybe not as athletic as people want him to be, but dude always got open and made plays.
It's interesting if he would have tweaked the hammy and not run the bad 40 time that he did, would he have been drafted? Like, that's the fascinating what if because he did. Some others that got a lot of mentions. Tez Johnson, who went 235 to Tampa. Will Howard.
Why?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Tez the smallest guy in the draft.
I mean, tiny, and didn't run that as fast as you thought he would. But I'm gonna tell you this, bro, that sucker's got some Allen Iverson. I mean, he's snapping ankles. I mean, and again, Tez Johnson is a guy that had 0% the chance to ever play in the NFL 10 years ago, 0%.
Yeah.
But the game is totally different than it's been, and because of the rules of you can't hit people and you can't be as physical, like. That changes for guys that are smaller and guys like that, that can run routes and get open, man. It'll be interesting to watch him because that dude is that you could play touch football on an elevator, Brent, and lose to him. Like, that's how freaking quick he is.
So Will Howard was another that got a lot of mentions. Will Johnson was one that got a decent amount of mentions, the corner out of Michigan who fell to 47, which is not the worst thing, but he was looked at as kind of a top five guy, especially after his freshman year. And then Dan Jackson was another that got a ton of mentions.
What about Cam Scatabut? He got a bunch.
I mean, I did see a good bit of those. I saw
a bunch of Cams and people, you know, it's interesting. The stigma that goes with certain players, you know, Cam, I mean, if you watch him as a running back, Brent, like he's got the gifts. It's not, he's not Toby Gearhart.
Yes.
He's got vision. I would argue he's got a lot more quickness than Toby Gearhart. He's got some physicality. We know that because he runs with the purpose, but he caught the ball out of the backfield. He's a guy that you wonder why he falls so far. The running back position obviously is not valued like it used to be, but he's a guy that could easily be a feature back, a guy in the NFL. Some of you go, how the heck did he fall so far being such a productive player?
Well, this draft, I think, is one where you're going to look back because even the grades and even some of the athletic trait part, it's not really like true separation where like first two round guys versus fourth round guys, big gap. The gap is tiny. So this draft is going to be one where a lot of fourth round guys end up being better players than guys taken in the second and even third round. But obviously we kind of talk more so about college football than anything here. And I think this draft tells us a lot about college football moving forward and really the current state of it. And number one to me is that the Power Four and or kind of basically the Power Two,
I say Power
is,
Two,
is definitively a real thing. 223 of the 257 picks were from Power Four schools, 86.7%, almost the entire draft.
26 of the first 32 picks in the first round were
SEC, Big Ten. And SEC.
So, I mean, we've covered this, and this is why, you know, this is why you feel like the AFC-NFC split at some point happens, because there's such a big discrepancy when you go 79 picks from the SEC, 71 from the Big Ten, 42 from the ACC, 31 from the Big 12. Like, there's a big drop off. And
yep.
So how this affects football moving forward, it'll be interesting. And then the Power Four, man. Yeah, I mean the non Power Four is not,
get your own playoff. You're playing a different sport. The NFL is telling you that you're playing a different sport. Go get your own playoff.
Here's the thing. Like, I think people would watch regardless. Like, I think it would be good to watch. You don't do it at the same time as the others, but
nope.
It's an interesting thought. But no, it's definitely clear that the top-heavy nature of college football. And listen, I'm not sure everybody loves the direction that college football has gone the last several years. Now, it's still fantastic. I mean, it's freaking awesome, and we're going to continue to watch it. But it is definitely heavy in certain areas, more so than the other.
Yeah, it's also one where, hey, the teams that were left standing in the playoff, they had the most guys picked. I mean, when you look at the totality of picks, like Ohio State, I think it was, had 14. Georgia 13, like Texas had a ton. Like the teams that were left towards the end had the most NFL talent. It's just that's the way it is.
And Ohio so State, 14 guys drafted by Ohio State, Brent, is second most in the history of the game. Yeah. Like they dropped that nugget on the broadcast when I was watching too. I mean, 14 guys drafted. Like the only one better was UGA with 15 in 2022. So like,
right.
You talk about an all-time talented team. And remember, a lot of those Ohio State guys stayed. Not
yes.
Yes, they spent money just like everybody else spent money. But a lot of those guys were there, the Sawyers, the JTs. Like,
yep, Cody Simon.
Simons. Like those are guys that stayed because they wanted to win a championship. They were so disappointed. They were so heartbroken. And they finally, you know, got it together, and they did it, and they proved they were the most talented team. But interesting to see their quarterback going so late when – you know, they got other guys flying off the board, and quarterback's usually the most important position. But that's a heck of a haul for Ohio State, 14 guys drafted.
So QB is actually where I want to go next, because I think that's something that you look back at this draft, and it's something you've known, but it's maybe now more apparent than ever. If you don't have the physical traits that put you in the first round as a quarterback, or really up there just from a physical trait standpoint, stay in college as long as you can and maximize that earnings, because like somebody like Quinn Ewers, maybe even, by the way, like somebody like Shador, who could have played another year, I think. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but
he could have.
Quinn Ewers went, what, 230 something? 231, I think, right after Dan Jackson. Yeah, 231 to Miami.
And if to your point, if Quinn Ewers stays in school, Quinn Ewers is going to go somewhere in college football and make over $1 million easy. Like
if not 2 to 3 times that.
Yeah. So he's going to do that. And when he goes and signs his contract, he's not going to make that. And he's going to be fighting for backup duty. How many roster spots do they? And remember, a quarterback, you hold 2 or 3. Like, yep. You don't hold as many. You got all these opportunities in college football, and we heard him link to UNC. So, I mean, you think about that. Like, had an opportunity, a chance to stay. And again, Quinn is so talented, and he looks good. He looks the part. Like, he's not the elite arm, but because he can do so much from different platforms, he's just never cleaned up his feet to me. And I've said that. Like, he's driven me nuts with that. But yeah, left at least a year on a table of high earnings. And guess what? You get to develop and then go to the NFL. You know, hopefully better yourself and better an opportunity. So definitely a parent.
Yeah, it's quite clear there's basically 3 tiers in terms of how the NFL – all right, if you're a potential franchise guy and or definitively a starter, we're going to take you in the top 15. If you have kind of starter tools but you haven't really shown it yet, or maybe you need to develop based on your offensive system, we'll take it the very end of round one, a la Jackson Dart or – Tyler Shuck, something like that. Round one, top round two. And everybody else, all right, 4th round later, like you saw Milroe go into late third, Gabriel go into late third. Like that's about the earliest you're going to go. And after that, it's just like, okay, randomly take a guy here or there, but basically 5th, 6th, 7th, even 7th round. So
by the way, that was
those are the tiers.
Quote was Jalen Milroe and the Seahawks. He said, Jalen Milroe said that he was told he was number one on their board, and they said that to the GM coach, and he was, and they're like, next question. Like, no, we didn't say that. No. But no, Milroe goes to a pretty good team though. Develop, obviously, and see what you can become. Sam Darnold's kind of, he's that guy now, which is, Sam had a great year with Minnesota. Coming into the Seahawks will be interesting. But either way, you develop from a guy like that with high character, knows how to play the game, it'd be good for him.
Quick question with Quinn. Do you think he should have portaled, or do you think, like, just in terms of how do you think he weighed that? Do you think he made what would you do in that situation? Maybe.
Well,
it's basically maximizing the 1 year versus, hey, now he's forever a Texas quarterback, that kind of thing. There's all sorts of components to that.
Well, and Texas would have been interesting because would they have gone to Arch anyways? Like, I think it would have been somewhere else probably, because the hype train for Arch, it left the station. Like, it yeah. needed to come to fruition. But listen, I would stay 100%. But I'm also a guy that when you weren't getting paid, I stayed in school for an extra year when I was projected to be a first-round pick after my junior year. Just, man, you don't get this years back. Like, these college years are awesome. Like, they're great. And the NFL is awesome too. But, you know, you got an opportunity now to maximize college life, be a kid. Now you're getting paid, and obviously expectations come with that and stuff like that, but it's the only opportunity I think you could. I think you go find a guy like Belichick. Like, I would have loved for him to go to Belichick, North Carolina, learn like crazy for a year, get coached hard, work on your mechanics, and then you go next year, and I think you get drafted higher, and you got a better chance to succeed. The further you go in the draft, by the way, the closer you are on a roster with someone else, and you've got a pick beside your name that's a lot longer than the other one, you don't make it. Like, the every advantage goes to the guy that was drafted higher, that I've made more of an investment in. I spent a higher pick on, obviously more draft, you know, more equity I've spent on this guy. Like, you start to slide down the radar, and you're fighting for a different spot on the roster than you would be if you're a higher draft pick, because now I see potentially you could be this. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've already drafted you here, so I think that does matter.
Some other miscellaneous things. It's kind of the end of the draft. One, first round, 23 of the 32 guys picked, 4- and 5-star recruits. So those things kind of matter. Those people work at that and do a good job with that. Round one, I saw 82% did not ever go to the portal, which to me actually makes sense. Correlation does not equal causation in that sense, because, hey, if it's a really good player, guess what? They're likely going to stay on the team that they're playing for.
I would be willing to bet that changes, and that percentage will go down in the future more than it did right now. I think that will go this direction, because I think more people will take a massive payday somewhere else.
I did see where Nick Saban said that he tried to get Wyatt Milam, the West Virginia O-line, in the transfer portal every year. The funny part of that being that Milam was never actually in the transfer portal. So that was an interesting comment that was made on television.
Hey, but coaches don't, they don't look at other people's rosters and try to plug people from other rosters. They don't do that.
No, not till they're in the portal. And then the biggest thing though is if you look at any sort of 2026 mock drafts, one, it's quarterback heavy, and two, it's not with your traditional powers. Like there's a lot of guys that aren't at the traditional power schools. And to me, it just makes it to where this sets up as a wild, anything can happen type college football season. That's when you look at some of those mock drafts, when traditionally it's laced with four and five guys from, you know, say three or four different teams. I mean, there's three or four Clemson guys, a couple Alabama guys, but outside of that, it's just spread out everywhere.
Yeah. The talent will continue to spread out like we've seen, but the quarterback spot, Klubnik, Drew Aller, obviously those are pretty big.
Nussmeier, Leavitt, Sellers, like there's those guys are
pretty big squads. Yeah, Leavitt I kept seeing, and I'm like, yeah, I agree. And I wonder, I think people that don't watch football that much thought, oh, Scataboo, flash in the pan, this guy's not, no, you'll see. You'll get it this year. That's why he was number two on my returning quarterback board. Leavitt's a freaking baller. Dude's an absolute stud. I mean, but yeah, right around the corner, brother. Not too long, not too far away, man. We'll get back at it Wednesday. Thank you guys for joining us. Another episode of See Ball, Get Ball. We continue to grow. Thank you guys for tuning in. The draft recap was fun. Had a little bit of a college spin to it, but we'll keep getting back to college football more and more. But thank you guys for joining us.